I'm Robert Cervelli, and this is Future Proofing, where we explore how many communities are taking charge of their own future in the face of our increasingly fragile world. I would like to acknowledge that this podcast originates from Nova Scotia, Canada, which is part of the unceded ancestral territory of the Mi'kmaq Indigenous peoples. The territory is called Mi'kma'ki. I'm pleased to announce our Thinkers series of podcasts. Our interview host for the series is Bill Martin from Pugwash, Nova Scotia. Bill runs an online radio program called Six Rivers. See sixrivers.ca for a lot of interesting programming. Bill Martin is also a thinker, one of about 150 people from around the world who participated in the Center for Local Prosperity's Climate and Anti-Nuclear Weapons Retreats since 2017. With this first interview of the series, Bill and I discuss the Thinkers Lodge, the many thinkers we have invited, and activism in our world today.
I've been promising you a conversation with the thinkers from the alumni, kind of an association of sorts, those who have attended the thinkers conferences and retreats at the Thinkers Lodge in Pugwash over the last 7 years or so. And joining us now is Regan Rosberg, an interdisciplinary artist and an associate professor of foundations and fine arts at Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design in Lakewood, Colorado. She was, in fact, a biology student who decided to switch, and she switched to art. And her life is now somewhat centered on biology and ecology, but with an art perspective. I got to meet Regan way back when at the very first Thinkers Conference on Climate Change in 2017, and she was one of the presenters at that time at Pugwash District High School. Regan attended the 2020 conference. That one had to be online because, of course, that was the retreat interrupted by the COVID pandemic. And she returned as one of the alumni for the 2023 reunion, the conference held last fall. So let's welcome Regan Rosberg, speaking to us from Colorado. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me here today.
Listen, I realize the time change, so thanks for getting up early, getting out of bed early to be with us. Appreciate that very much.
I'm an early riser.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I'm not, so you can make up for me. How's that? You know, looking at your background a little bit, you've said that you were moved by the teachings of Joanna Macy, and of course dealing with the question of the great unraveling and the great turning, which were kind of topics at the first conference. Why were you moved by that?
When I did my graduate thesis I finished in 2016, my work was about a concept of environmental melancholia, which is, it has to do with grief. It has to do with how when grief isn't processed, people struggle with moving through it, and instead they can turn to things that are consumptive or distracting. And a friend of mine, Chris, introduced me to Macy back then because she was a leader where she was giving credence and talking about how important it was to grieve and to feel that kind of appreciation for the natural world. And her whole, the biggest takeaways from her whole stance on it was that grief is a natural response to love, loving something. And it's this emotion, and it keeps going on after we've done thing, and it's a normal response. So when I thought about it in terms of the environment, it was this kind of profound realization that not only was it normal for people to feel sad about things that were happening in the natural world, but also that it could be this transformative process in terms of getting in touch with a kind of really intense motivation to create change and to know oneself. And Joanna Macy had this quote that I put on my, I think I even signed my email with it. I have little quotes sometimes at the end of my emails, and it's the most profound thing someone can do at this time is to be fully present to what's happening in our world. And to me, that was the conferences that we've had, but especially this last one, because it takes a lot of courage and awareness and humility and kindness to sit and listen to people and to just be present with yourself and others.
Indeed, indeed. And it's interesting you've chose the word grief to talk about, because, of course, I attended as well one of the specialty retreats that took place in between the first and the last, the one faith-based. And the word grief was never really, really mentioned, but you can have a sense of knowing that we needed to grieve the world and do something about it, kind of thing. You're absolutely right. And, of course, that means over the 7 years there have been different kinds of conferences, but also a whole whack of thinkers, we call them now, about 168, if I'm correct. And I wonder, what did you think about the wide array of thinkers from so many backgrounds and so many perspectives?
I thought it was wonderful. I've always enjoyed hearing from experts that are out there on the ground, you know, do their life's work is researching ecology or climate or food security or, you know, different aspects of politics and policymaking, and also people, you know, that are just concerned. And for me, it was always a very rich and rewarding experience to be able to gather that kind of information into my own experience and then bring it back to my own life and share it with other people here, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's important to see those different perspectives.
And you mentioned, too, the thinkers' retreats added a certain kind of humanity, a certain spiritual principles, the indigenous beliefs taken into account. But you seem to be more moved by the fact that young people, the younger voices were taken in. And you said, in fact, it had a profound effect on you. Why?
I mean, I'm an educator here in Colorado. So I work with my college students are anywhere from, you know, 18 years old up to about 30 years old. And they've been kind of handed this very strange, problematic situation with all of the changes that we're seeing. And my generation didn't experience that. And I know even without that, I needed mentors. You know, I needed people to guide. I think it's even more important looking at what they're experiencing. They need mentors. They need guidance, and they also need to be heard. And I find that I learn so much listening from my students. You know, I think that it's important to take them not only seriously, but to elevate their voices. And I include their voices in my work and want to called Dear Future, where they write a letter. That student voices started that piece for me, and it was really impactful. So at the conference, to hear the younger voices talking with eloquence and vulnerability and strength, and to acknowledge that, you know, had different, you know, perspectives at different times, it's nice to see that and be encouraged, you know, by the older us.
I regret to advise that we're getting some breaking up on the line, sadly. There's nothing we can do about it, of course. You're in Colorado, I'm in Nova Scotia, so it's just that, I guess. I was taken, of course, by the fact that there were scientists there were professors there were. I was a journalist who happened to be allowed to be there. I wasn't invited to the first one other than to attend on the Friday evening for the get-together to get a sense of what was going to happen on the weekend. But then once I was there, they asked me to stay, and I really appreciated that. And then there are writers and so on, but there'd be people out there right now listening to us and say, what does an artist bring to a discussion on climate change. And at the time, I have to admit, I wondered too, so you're going to run home and make a painting about it? But I realize now you look at things differently, creatively. And with that, I really appreciated your participation. What do you say to people who wonder, what does an artist have to say about a world crisis?
That's awesome. My friends are artists and the people I work with are artists. And we think of things abstractly, holistically. We're bringing together different connections from different disciplines. But most importantly, you know, we are the mirrors in a way. We are internally aware of our own state. And we're butting up against these uncomfortable places in ourselves constantly. And we have an observational skill. Also processing what's going on in the world. And so we take things in, we rearrange them, we find a symbolic language, we digest them, metabolize them, and then we end up creating something, whether it's music or a film or a piece of writing or a painting, you know, something that you would see in a gallery. But all of those processes reflect back culture, they reflect politics, they reflect different perspectives. So in a way, we are the eyes and the voice of what's happening in culture. And it's been that way, you know, for thousands of years. And giving it a voice and a solid kind of aspect, that's what artists bring to conversation. It's incredibly important that they're included and lifted up.
Well, you make a good point. I mean, way before there was radio, TV, newspapers, and so on, there were artists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have buildings with paintings on the ceiling. We have frescoes. We have paintings all over the place that delineate history, keeping the story mm-hmm. and the traditions alive. So I really respect that. I wonder, when you were in Pugwash, did you happen to notice the open-air gallery?
I don't remember, Bill.
You know, now that I think about it, I'm sorry, now that I think about it, I don't think it was there in 2017. It was certainly there, okay. though, the last fall. Louise Cloutier is a lifelong art teacher who had spent her career here in the area and an astounding artist as well. Played a major role in capturing art pieces from artists all around the area, including kids in grade 3 at the elementary school. And instead of putting up the paintings and all the renditions in a building somewhere, they put them on the buildings scattered throughout the community. And I kind of hoped you would have known or seen that. I wanted to get your thoughts and opinion on that. But there's an example, too, of living history, even in our mm-hmm. humble little community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, And also, I think it's important that artists reflect back, you know, beauty. Kathy Eaton is doing these really incredible paintings of landscapes and flora and fauna. You know, there's artists that are capturing nature. There's artists that are capturing politics. Like, you know, in the film, in the documentary, there's a clip of the Doomsday Clock. And the Doomsday Clock was actually an artwork that was created by one of the wives of the men that worked on the Manhattan Project. So they needed some kind of a symbolic art to represent how close humans could come to destroying themselves. And the clock is a piece of artwork. So there's this really nice wide range of what art bringing peace or showing some of the more troubled topics.
Well, you mentioned the Manhattan Project, of course, very timely with the movie Oppenheimer. And, of course, that was all the subject of the Thinkers Conference in 1957, mm-hmm. which started the ball rolling about talking about the possible end of our world. And, of course, then it was our doing to create the instruments of war that could do in the world. Now it's climate. And we've created the situation that could do in the world. Any last-minute thoughts here about art and the end of the world or how we stop it?
It's the end of a way that we live in the world. It's the end of one world and the beginning of another one. And I think the perspective to this change is really, really important.
Reagan, thank you so much. That's our time for today, and I really appreciate you being here. And being the first of the alumni, in fact, to come, we're going to do this every second Friday for the next while and see if we can work our way through 100 or so of the thinkers who have been to Pugwash on this topic over the last 7 years. Thank you for being first.
Thank you so much, Bill. You have a wonderful day.
You be safe out there.